So what do you do when life happens? If you listen to this show before, if you're a first-time listener, you're going to know by the end of the hour, you get catalytic. Hi, I'm your host, Cheryl Hirsch-Kramer. I am a love of life catalyst. You can find me on the web at transformingthroughlove.com. We're not going to talk about love tonight. We usually talk about the catalytic power of love. Instead, we're talking about the catalytic power of trust, which is a very necessary component to have love. So this man named Teo Alfaro had this interesting idea some years back, and this was his idea. What if you put wolves and teenagers together to help each other heal? Now, there's a concept. And because he had this idea, he has developed the only program in America that has this happening. Wolf Connection is a 501c3 not-for-profit, but it's not just any 501c3 not-for-profit. This one is a wolf and wolf dog rescue / youth empowerment program. They do incredible work, and we have Kent Ferber here to tell us all about it. Kent is a volunteer at Wolf Connection. He has a daughter who is a wolf whisperer, and he had a great grandfather named Wolf, so he's got to do this. We're happy to have Mom with us tonight. Thank you, Kent, for being here. How are you?
My great grandfather. If I had known that years ago, I would have gotten involved a lot earlier, that his name was Wolf.
What a coulda, shoulda, my friend. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You're now, and that's the important thing. So let's bring us up to speed. For people who don't know Wolf Connection, who is Teo Alfaro? Who is Tala? How did this whole thing happen?
Well, Teo is the founder and the CEO of Wolf Connection, and right now he's busy building kennels, which we can talk about a little bit later on. He's an educator by training. He's actually from Argentina. Which is important because a key population we work with are Spanish-speaking people in California. And he had this idea. He actually used to sleep with mountain lions. So this was a natural progression for him. He's always believed in the power of animals to heal, but wolves have this unique component to it. And so, yeah, he found Tawa one day and he got Tawa a partner. And over time, over years, he created the organization Wolf Connection. It's remarkable what he's done with it. We are right now going into our complete next step, which is really the most exciting part. We are going from a 30-acre ranch, which only part of it was useful, without power and electricity, which made it interesting for the volunteers, or running water, to a beautiful new 165-acre ranch, with full utilities and everything. That's going to be spectacular. And we're moving there on May 7th, so everyone's very busy getting everything set for that.
And all the best with you on this one. This sounds amazing. For people, we're going to give your website several times during the hour. Let's start it off now. If people want to donate to Wolf Connection, how do they do that?
The best place to go is wolfconnection.org, and there's a donation link. There's various ways to donate. One of the more exciting ways, which I've done for several years, is you actually adopt one of the animals, and that means that you pay for what we call the general care of an animal, and then you get a plaque at the animal's at his kennel. If you come to California or you're in the West Coast, you get special visitation rights. You'll get special pictures and updates. It's really exciting. I've done this for quite a while, and it's really the best way to do it. But there's many other opportunities that are anything will take anything from a dollar on up. So please feel free to get involved.
We'll be talking more about that as we go along. So Wolf Connection puts together high-risk youth and wolves, and they both had difficult backgrounds. How does this work? How do the kids find Wolf Connection? How do the wolves come to you? Tell us about this.
Yeah, those are excellent questions. Let's start off with the animals first, because that's where it all starts with. These are all rescues. There's actually a relatively large network of rescue operations around the United States because you've got either illegal or legal breeding of these animals. It's illegal in many states. In a couple of states, it's actually illegal to be breeding them. And so people find out that these are not pets. People think, oh, I'll have a wolf dog and it's really a great pet. It's really not. It is a wild animal. The wolf is the dominant gene. The wolves have been around for well over 100,000 years. The dogs have only been around much more recently. So you're dealing with a wild animal. People have actually kept them in dormitories, or colleges, and apartments, in their houses, and it's not a very good environment for either person. So that happens that the wolf just gets either let go, or they get into a kennel, or they're found on the street. And that's when places like Wolf Connection come in. As I said, there is a network because there's far more animals that have need to be rescued than there are spaces anywhere in the country. So it's actually something that's a very significant problem that we want to get to as well. The teenagers that we work, so these, by the way, the overwhelming majority of these animals that we have rescued have come from very, very bad backgrounds. The ones I mentioned, those are actually the best case scenario where they just dropped off on the side of the road. Many of these have come from a very, very abusive environments around the country. We've rescued wolves as far away as Alaska. They are really, really just horribly abused near death. We've taken some, many of them that are just right near death. And that's where the rehabilitation comes in. So each of these animals has a story. So let's start with that. We have a pack of about 28 animals right now. Each of those 28 animals has a remarkable story, how their lives were impacted by abuse and neglect and just horrific treatment. Now let's deal with these teenagers. We get the teenagers through the public school system, and there's something called expulsion schools, which when I was a kid, Cheryl, they were called reform schools. And these are schools where these are kids that have grown up with nothing. They've grown up either in drug households, they've committed crimes. These are kids that are on their very, very last leg of opportunity before they turn 18 and are kind of thrown out into the wild themselves. They've had these abusive backgrounds. They've had these horrible situations. They have no education in certain situations. So we pair them together as part of this school program, and again, this is all done with the public school, and they go through an 8-week training course. And part of what we do is vocational training. We give them skills. In addition to being around the animals, they get video production training, but they get construction training. They get real life skills training. What the difference in what we do, besides what you would appear to be, is the teens come to us. The first day they come to us. We don't have any interest in hearing about their life story. They have social workers. They have caseworkers. We don't need to hear that. They don't need to spill their guts to us. We don't really need that either. But what we do is we introduce them to each of the animals, and they, over time, relate to the abusive or neglect or violent background of each animal, and they're drawn to that. And there's enough animals that we have with enough different stories that they're going to find one or maybe two. Let me give you an example. There was a young woman who came to us, and two of the wolves that we saved, and they really saved from near death, is actually because they were obese and animals. They were being fed candy and chocolate by somebody. It was just, They meant well, they just didn't know what they were doing. So the animals were near death from their stomach exploding on them. They were about 170, 180 pounds, as opposed they should have been about 90. So wow. I asked her, which of the animals did you connect with? And she said, those are the animals, the ones that came that were very heavy. And I looked at her, she was kind of heavy set. So I figured there was a weight thing that she felt that. Well, that wasn't it. She said that the animals, the guy gave the animals chocolate and candy to keep them from running away, not realizing that it was killing them. And she said, I was raised, my father gave me crack cocaine so I wouldn't run away. And she connected and bonded with that animal.
Wow.
So there's no situation that doesn't work here.
So the question I have is, I've had a couple of dogs. I know you've had dogs, and dogs are not wolves. We're going to talk about them. Right. They really aren't. Don't get a wolf as a pet. Not a good idea. Yeah. Don't get a wolf hybrid as a pet. Really not a good idea. When you get a dog, you're always taught, have the dog pick you. You don't pick the dog. So when the kids come to Wolf Connection, does the wolf pick the kid, or does the kid pick the wolf?
That's a great question. I think it starts with the stories, but then over time, over a period of 2 months, they get exposure to the animals, and we're very careful about how we do that. And they'll find, the more wolf the animal is, the more they tend to be drawn to the most desperate human. It's an amazing thing you see. It's almost like a Ouija board. They can sense that the team that's going to the most serious problem, and the more wolf-like animal it is, they will find those teams and they will go to them. This is where the trust comes in, Cheryl. again, the biggest difference between these animals and a dog is this. A dog is trained to be your best friend. A dog will approach. A dog will be wants to be hugged. A dog wants to be kissed. The wolf's only real enemy is man. So the wolf doesn't, they do not want to be near you. They don't want to come anywhere near you. So that's where the trust comes in, where they had to learn that even though they were abused by people, that there are people that are not going to abuse them. And those are the staff members and volunteers at Wolf Connection. So they learn to trust us. And in turn, they learn to trust, and these wolves and the teens learn to trust each other. It's a very subtle situation that happens, but invariably they find a match without exception.
Can you talk us through what happens when a wolf is rescued? And I know some of the stories. I was on your website. Yes. They're just horrific. Some of these animals have just been through pure hell. And they come to Wolf Connection. So how do you get from a terrified animal who's been treated just horribly to an animal who will be happy to be around kids and actually hug them and kiss them?
Well, you know, that takes time. And frankly, not every animal we rescue is going to be with a program animal. Most of them end up being that way, but there are some that just, they're not going to get there, and we're not going to put anybody at risk, obviously. They're going to have a home for life. That doesn't change at all. But in terms of becoming a program animal, it takes time. We have very skilled Teo, and his staff are very, very skilled at this. They're very conservative about it. And that we rescued an animal a couple years ago who was hours from being put to death by animal rescue, and they called us, and I said, listen, you know, we know you guys, this is really horrible. You want to come down and see if you can do something. And this animal was just ribs showing through the skin. The ear had been eaten away by fleas. I mean, just really horrible. Oh. And when we took the animal and one of our senior staff took the animal back, the animal had never even been on dirt. They'd been on concrete their whole life. And so we put him in a kennel, and it was this whole exposure. And then he never had clean water, so that we had to train them that this water is going to be there for you. There's going to be food. There's going to be trust. And they do find that. And it's an amazing experience. And it does take time. That's the most important thing. We don't rush any of these situations.
How do the people develop trust with the wolves and the wolves develop trust with the people? You know, I read the story about this one volunteer who sat outside the kennel for, was it a year?
Yep.
Without even going over near it, because the wolves needed to get used to them. How does this trust evolve over time?
That sometimes that's the way it evolves. Sometimes it's sitting outside. Sometimes it's showing them you care. It's the feeding. It's the care. It's the washing. It's them understanding that you're not here to abuse them, that actually we're there to care for them and love them and give them everything they possibly could want. It takes time, and it's about understanding that each animal is different. They all come from different backgrounds. There are some animals, for example, that have been abused by men. They're not going to work as well with the male volunteers or staff as they do with the women, so we understand that. We also pair them up. Eventually, and it's usually two to a kennel, so they have some companionship. That's an experiment also, how they relate to each other. There's also a hierarchy among the animals that you have an alpha that introduces the new wolf to the pack. So, for example, when a pack howls, when a, you there? I'm sorry, somebody was calling. I'm sorry. I got to kill this. Yeah. When a pack howls, and there's all what makes a pack howl, a wolf howl, each wolf has their own unique pitch to their howl. So when we bring a new animal in, they have to find their own pitch among the group howl. And they'll be getting messages and indications from some of the other animals what they can do, what they can't do. We'll put an animal with an alpha, so the alpha will train the animal on certain things. A lot of it is we're matching them up with other animals who serve as trainers. One of the other things that we look at is what has been the experience with this animal. And can it be a program animal? That's going to take some time. If we think an animal can be a program animal, and I mean by that being exposed part of our program, either the teens or with the community or anything else, they're going to start learning how to behave on a leash on a group of hike, because hiking is a key component of a wolf's behavior. So we're in the mountain, the Antelope Valley in the mountains, And so how do they behave on the leash? How do they behave? And it's going to be a process, and it takes time, and it takes patience. And as I said, not every animal makes it, but every animal gets care no matter what. And unfortunately, there's always a slew of new animals that are ready to come in because there's a desperate need for the rescue.
And even with the new ranch, I would assume that an extra space that you're going to have that's going to get filled up way too fast.
Oh, we could fill it up in a day or two. I mean, if we had the resources to do that, we would do that. We just don't. Yeah. And we turn away wolves every single week, as every rescue place does. We're the only ones that actually, instead of just a rescue, again, develops them into program animals. There are other rescue places in California that are larger that actually have those resources, but we're the ones that look at them as program animals.
Yeah, I've got a question about the teens who come to you. I one of my big issues is teaching empathy. And these are kids who have had terrific lives. You know, they've not been treated with love and respect. They've been abused. They've, you know, lots of things have happened to them. How do these kids develop empathy for the wolves when they've never had it in their lives?
Well, that's listening to their stories and identifying with them is the first thing. The second component is that they understand during the program, first of all, that the animal component is only one part of the program. As I said, there's academic and there's vocational training as well. There's also very heavy lifting. We are on a ranch, and that requires a lot of effort for the care and the maintenance of the ranch and the animals. So they learn that as they can move forward in their own development, they get more access to what they really are interested in. They have homework assignments. They have actual real schoolwork. If they don't do that, then they come back and they don't get the privilege of being around the animals that day. It's a normal school environment in that regard. They need to understand, and part of it, I must say, is this also, Cheryl, there's another answer. We've gone through a lot of classes now, a lot of graduating classes, so the word is getting around that this is where you want to be. Not every kid comes, I was there, not every kid comes off the bus really anxious to do this. They understand that this is what they're going to do. And it's amazing how the animals will eventually reach out to those who are a little bit more suspicious. I wish you could see this. You have to come and see this. We, as I said, we do construction. One of the main components they learn is construction, and we have power tools, professional level power tools. They built not just tree houses on our property. They built two tree houses on two separate trees, but then they built a bridge, a walkway bridge. It must be about 100 feet going between the trees. They get that confidence of what they can do, that we're telling them, you can do this. So the animals are part of it, but it's also part of Teo's plan to give them the opportunity to grow and to learn. I was working with a young man, probably about 17, and we were building kennels at the time. And he was asked to measure, he was asked to write down measurements of wood. And the measurement came in at about 70 and a half inches. So he was told, write down 70 and a half. This young man had no idea how to write a fraction at 17. Wow. So a lot of times they're stepping back into real basic schoolwork and, okay, we're going to help you do that. You know, we're not going to judge you. That's the first thing. We're not going to judge you. The animals may judge you, but we're not going to judge you. You're here to learn. You're here to grow. Let the animals take their role. And they do eventually find this tremendous success. They have a much higher graduation rate, a much higher attendance rate. Everything that we're doing with them is working. We just need more. As I said, we needed more space and more opportunity. So now we are going to be able to run multiple programs. We also work with alcohol and drug treatment programs as well. So there's a lot of various populations that we work with that we integrate into part of their program.
Yeah, and I know every case is going to be different. Every kid has a different background. Every wolf kid connection is going to be different. Can you take us through the history of just one, like maybe Nina and Miko, or whatever one comes to mind right now? What happens when they meet? How they develop a bond together, and what happens at the end of the 8-week program?
Well, the more experienced animals that have been around, I mean, they're obviously going to be a little bit more social. They're going to be a little bit friendlier. You know, the wolf interaction is introduced very gradually because, there again, we're dealing with safe. Number one, remember something. All of these teens are wards of the state of California. Okay, so there's a legal issue, there's a safety issue. So they are, you know, this is not just thrown into, oh, here, play with a wolf. It doesn't work that way. A lot of it is introducing them to it very, very gently, very slowly. They're going to be very resistant. There are going to be some animals, as I said, that we've used more frequently that are going to be easier to approach, and they can sense the hesitation in the teen, and they understand that it's their job to make the teen more comfortable. And as I said, they just have this wolf sense that they can understand what's going on. Part of what the teens have to learn how to do is, you know, this is the key component, as you know. It's energy. The wolf senses energy. The wolf is the ultimate energy animal. You need to get your energy down. You need to, and you tell any 17-year-old to get their energy down, and it's almost impossible. So they have to learn how to get their energy down so the animal will approach them. They don't approach the animal. Let the animal come to you. You do that by getting your energy down, your breathing, your relaxation, and that's how the whole thing starts. It is a very, as I said, it's a very detailed process, and we take it very slowly. And not every student works at exactly the same level either. As we say, not every animal does. So some of them will work a little bit slower. Some of them will get into it a little bit faster. You can't predict what's going to happen. That's the other thing. You cannot predict what's going to happen either. You can think you know what's going to happen, but there's always going to be some magical connection that nobody knew about because we didn't know about what was going on. We don't know these teens' background. We know the animal's background. So we'll find a connection that we never realized. That's the term wolf connection. It's about that.
What has been your personal wolf connection?
Well, I actually sponsor a wolf, one of the wolves named Chance, who Chance and his brother Coda were rescued from Alaska, and maybe it's because I have a brother, and they were literally chained up as almost like a sideshow on the road, to the point that the chain was embedded in their neck, and the guy who had them there, who was abusing, I mean, just terribly abused, actually ended up getting charged with animal cruelty. To get them acclimated, first of all, I mean, when they are out of the kennel, they are on leash. So you're now taking an animal that had a very negative experience with a leash, being chained around the neck, partially it was embedded in the neck. So that takes a little bit longer. And it really is about 2.5 years since I really only got a chance to really kind of do one-on-one time last summer because it just took them. And it was just one of those things where Chance just kind of said, okay, I'm ready, and just started to be very, very social and very active. We took him on hikes with people and became one of the real program animals. Unfortunately, Chance right now is, one of the hard parts of Wolf Connection is Chance has cancer. And as you can imagine, the medical care is rather expensive. So that's part of Wolf Connection also, is the teens understanding that not every animal is going to be always healthy all the time. We are going to lose some animals. They are wild animals. And there's no amount of medicine that can cure them all. So there's the emotional loss as well, but then there'll be other animals coming along. And, you know, I was there a couple weeks ago, and I hadn't seen Chance since he was diagnosed, and I did exactly what you said earlier, Cheryl. I took a chair, I sat in front of his kennel. You could see his body was shaved, the line was marked where the radiation is being administered, and I just sat there. And until finally, after a while, he came over and to the edge of the fence, and I didn't touch him. I was giving him space, and we just kind of talked to each other, and he understood that I was there to support him, and that in turn supported me. He was giving me that don't worry about me look.
How is he doing with the cancer treatment?
It's tough. It is tough. I mean, it's tough. It's part of what we do in the treatment, in the medical component, is obviously we're looking for cured situations. In those situations where the animal is terminal, we're looking to do either extend the life, but again, based on quality of life, not just the number of days. We've had animals that live to be 19, 20 years old. Where in the wild, their lifespan is only 7. But it's also about respecting and dignity of the animal. They're also going to tell you when they're ready to go. It is the thing about death and the pack is probably one of the more interesting components. We had an animal who lost his partner, his kennel mate, his best friend. and for years, and they were together and died of cancer, and was every day at 2 o'clock for some reason. Now, when the pack starts to howl, one wolf will start it, the others will all join in, it can go on for quite a while. But this time, this one howled at 2 o'clock, and the other animals did not join in, and there was some signal after a minute or two that he gave where the other animals joined in the morning, and it's a morning howl, they're in mourning. This went on every day at 2 o'clock for weeks.
You know, I know I've been through a lot of deaths, and I didn't have my community around me. I wish I would have been a wolf at that point. We understand what's really important at that time. That's a great story.
They do. And, you know, and that's, you know, that's a lot of the component also. Remember something. I mean, the people that taught us about wolves are the Native Americans and the tribes around the world. They understood this far before we did. But the healing power of the animal, their unique nature, their intelligence, the mass media, the mass media, and I hate to chastise any of the people who, the animation people in the 30s and 40s that did the Big Bad Wolf and stuff like that. You know, people learn to be afraid of wolves. That they're, first of all, they're alone, they're gigantic, and they're going to eat anything they see. Well, nothing could be further than the truth. They're not. They're gentle. They are a pack animal. They don't survive alone very well. And the pack does hunt when they're in the wild, but they don't hunt for pleasure. They hunt for food. And if they take down a kill, it's really only going to be about every 2 weeks they're going to eat in the wild, where we feed them, you know, twice a day.
Do you know the story about St. Francis of Assisi and the wolf?
No, I'm sure I do, but I don't recall it right now.
It's a beautiful story, and I'm not Catholic, but I was doing the research, and I found the story out. It's a beautiful story. Briefly, St. Francis was living in this town in Italy, and there was a wolf who was killing a lot of the animals, the chickens and the goats, and he was killing the people who were taking care of the chickens and the goats. And everybody was terrified of the wolf, so St. Francis volunteered to go and talk to the wolf. People said, "You're going to die. He's going to kill you too." And St. Francis said, "No, God's on my side. I'll be fine." And he went, and he said, "Brother Wolf," and the wolf didn't understand why he was there, and he said, "I want you to understand what's going on here. What is it that we need to understand about you? Isn't this a great story? What do we need to know about you?" And the wolf said to him that he had been injured, and he left the pack. The pack had no time for a wolf that was injured. He would have liked to have eaten deer and rabbits. He couldn't run fast enough to catch them. So all he could do was break into people's yards and take their goats and take their chickens. And he says, "I just want to be fed. That's all I want." So St. Francis and the wolf struck a deal that the town would adopt him. They would feed him, and in return, he wouldn't kill anybody. And he put out his hand to shake hands, and the wolf gave him his paw. So they went into town, and the townspeople thought this was just lunacy, and they could see the wolf was different with St. Francis. And they accepted the wolf. Even the people who lost family members accepted the wolf. The wolf was called Brother Wolf. The wolf lived the last 2 years of his life being fed by all the people in the town. And when the wolf finally passed away, he was mourned as Brother Wolf.
That's great. And that's, you know, that is, you know, there are so many great stories. And you know, we had about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, there was an organization of elders, global elders, the 13 tribes. These are native tribes in 13 different countries. And they get together every 4 years. And the last get-together was in Montana a couple of summers ago. And Wolf Connection was invited to bring some of the animals there. And the respect and the admiration and the awe that these people showed for the wolves was absolutely extraordinary. They were mesmerized by them. And we had actually a situation one day where our animals had not been exposed to any horses at that point in time. We now have a couple of horses as well. But we're walking the wolves down the road to where this gathering is, and a bunch of people on horseback are coming along. And we had no idea how the wolves and the horses were going to interact. So there was a little sense of nervousness, and the wolves and the horses went up to each other, and within a half a minute, they were like cuddling and kissing.
Wow.
It's amazing. I mean, they are, I mean, yes, there are there are stories that are all true, but the number of people that get killed by a wolf is actually in the single digits every year. Because, yes, there's going to be a wolf that's injured, that is something, but again, they don't want to be near people. They don't want to approach people. So we tell people, but unfortunately, this issue that's going on with the breeding, and again, it is legal in certain states. And in certain states, you can go on Craigslist and buy these animals from breeders. Yeah. Of course, they don't tell you what you're going to end up, what's going to happen to you. And then the animals get dumped, and then we all know what happens after that. I mean, a tremendous amount of them, unfortunately, have to be put down by animal shelters because they're not pets. And for example, I mean, in California, the biggest state with them is that it is illegal to breed them. It is illegal to possess them without licensing. So it's pretty strict in California. Most of the other states don't have that. Because, again, we don't want, it's about animal cruelty. It's also about protecting people. You know, people think, oh, I'll just take this animal and it'll be a pet. And it's not a pet. It is not a pet. We have the licensing. One of the things that's been we've been working on at the new ranch is the kennels, is that building new kennels, the codes are very, very strict. And, of course, we want to go 2 to 3 times beyond what the codes call for to make sure the animals are safe. And we're doing that. It's going to be just horrific. I mean, I've been to the ranch. And I was one of the people who helped pick it out. It used to be, interesting enough, this used to be a large movie animal ranch. So if you saw movies like the, We Bought a Zoo, and you wondered where the elephants and the giraffes came from, it was on this ranch. And the gentleman who had the ranch moved his operation up to Oregon, and we bought the ranch. So everything, of course, had to be torn down because it was all built for large animals. And we're making all the adjustments, and also because we can have programs. Because of the nature of the people that we serve, Cheryl, either they're wards of the state, the teen programs, or they're in substance abuse programs, and their confidentiality is extremely important. Well, at the old ranch, we couldn't have two programs at the same time. We couldn't have people running into each other. The new ranch is so expansive, and because it's built into a hill, it's got 3 separate levels. So we can actually serve 3 different groups at the same time once we get enough volunteers and animals. And we're going to make it into a corporate retreat. We're going to be able to do fundraising off of that. There's going to be organic gardening, and we're working. Everything's going to be powered by solar power. It's an extraordinary operation. And, you know, this is Teo's vision. We're just helping him.
It's brilliant. Would you give us the website again for people who may have joined us late?
Sure. You can go to wolfconnection.org. That's one word, wolfconnection.org. You can also go to, if you want to see, and we have videos there, but another way to look at videos is just go to YouTube and click and punch in Wolf Connection, type in Wolf Connection. A lot of the videos that you will see are made by our teams. We teach them video production. That's, again, one of the vocational opportunities they get here is writing and television production. And they are amazing. And they'll tell you the stories. And you'll hear these stories over and over again, much better than I could ever do. And you'll also hear the howl, which is really one of the more remarkable things. A couple of years ago, one of the Teo and at that point his fiance Renee got married at the ranch, and it was a Saturday, and the kennels are in, at least at the old ranch, the kennels are in a horseshoe formation, and the center of the horseshoe is where the wedding ceremony is. So people were seated and waiting for, and of course they were going to be escorted by the wolves to get married. And right before when everybody got silent, the entire pack started howling. And it went on for 4 minutes. And we had a New York Times reporter there covering the wedding as part of the story. And she was convinced that I set the wolves up to do that. And it doesn't. And the rule of thumb is when they begin to howl, no matter what we're doing, you stop and you listen and you partake of the energy they're giving out. And, you know, I know you're on the East Coast, and I'm from Brooklyn, so it's very hard for me to believe all this stuff when I first got up there. But I've seen really miraculous things happen. I've seen the animals do amazing things. I've seen people. We do a community hike where it's a fundraiser where people go out with the animals, and it's amazing how their lives are changed by it, just by that exposure to them.
Could you tell us about the wolf principles?
Sure. It's an amazing concept of what these are the things. This is what Teo kind of came up with. And one of the more fundamental Wolf principles, again, is the fact that it's forgiveness and trust, and understanding that, you know, we are all here together. We are all part of the foundation of the planet. And the principles are in place of understanding that there's a connection that we have to create. That the animals are looking to us for communication. It's about finding your place in the world. It's about understanding that the wolves act as a group. And one of the key things to look at is that the wolves are the foundation for our society. The wolves were the first animals that humans took after to model the family. The alpha, the omega, all those concepts started by them watching wolf packs 100,000 years ago. It was also in the caves. And the wolves will live as a society together, and everybody has their role. And it's an amazing concept. Probably one of the better examples I can give you is in the wild. When they do take down an animal, let's just use an elk or something like that, they divvy up the parts of the animal to each wolf depending upon the needs of the animal. So some may need some of the organs that have, you know, more iron. Some may need more fat. They really do understand this. The principles are focused on understanding that, first of all, the wolves are okay with themselves. How they are able to go from being abused and neglected and beaten to trust is really something that a wolf can do. And because they are okay with themselves at all times, they understand that. They give 150% to everything they do. So they choose carefully what they're going to do. When they play, Cheryl, they play. It is really amazing to watch the play. That we have these turnouts. In fact, the new ranch has a 7-acre playground for them, which is going to be amazing. There are animals that are not self-centered. There's none of the pride that humans have. They care about each other. You don't see, yes, you'll see aggression sometimes between two animals about that may be doing dominance things going on, but it's never about anything petty. It's about what's important to them. And of course, as I said, in the example of the kill, they work together. It's a collaborative effort. Everything they do, they are amazing tunnel masters. They know how to make tunnels in their kennels, which is one of the reasons we have to dig the fence so deep, because they're so strong. But it's also, I think probably the most important thing is that they're always exploring. They're never happy unless they're finding something new, unless they're finding out what's going on around them, and they're curious. But they're curious not for the sake of being curious, but to understand that there's always new things in the world. Nothing is stagnant in a wolf's life. In the wild, they are on the move. That is part of their way of living. They're almost like sharks in that regard, except sharks are isolated. But the wolves are in a pack, and they're just remarkable animals, and they have the ability to trust again. So hopefully we're teaching our people that you can trust again.
Yeah, I saw this quote, wolves let go of the past and make room for new things in their lives. That's not always easy for people who've been abused. And I'm just in awe that these magnificent animals can continue to move on with their lives and not get dragged down by this. That takes amazing. I don't even have a word for that, but I'm just in awe that they can do that.
Well, it's a wolf. That's the true definition of a wolf, is the ability to move forward. I'm not there every day, but of all the times I've been at the ranch, 100 times or so, I've never seen any indication of anything otherwise. They may be having a bad day, and they'll let you know they're having a bad day, meaning that don't go near me. I'm not really in a good mood today, and that's fine. But the next day it's going to be a completely different day. They're also going to give you indications about what they're comfortable with. They're very specific. There was one wolf that we had, unfortunately, was one of our really key animals that we lost, unfortunately, Rocky. And Rocky was the biggest kisser, is really large animal, and gentle as anything. And one day he's lying down, and there are three of us rubbing him. So it takes three people to really manage the whole belly of a wolf because there's something. Rocky was so long. And after a while, you know, we just stopped because our arms got tired. And he gave us this look that said, I don't remember giving you the right to stop. He just wanted us to keep rubbing him. And it was real simple, but he was very clear in his intention to us. This is not acceptable. So we kept doing that until he was fine with it. You know, people who come to California is an amazing place to come and visit. For me, it's a great place to live. But for people who are coming to California to visit on vacation or to see family, but in Southern California, come visit us at Wolf Connection. The new ranch is going to be open in May. It'll take a couple months to get everything running, but it's going to be a spectacular opportunity for people to really get to see and interact with the animals, because that's when we do the community hike. We bring animals that are socialized to the point that there's a tremendous amount of human interaction with them. Kissing, photographs, everything that's on our website, you see, that's from those programs. So we really invite everybody to come, and also invite everybody to go to the website at wolfconnection.org and see if there's an animal with a story that compels you to maybe want to donate or to adopt an animal for a certain period of time, or just to get involved. And, you know, we tell people when they leave Wolf Connection, you know, in addition to donating, one of the most important things they can do is tell other people. For a relatively small organization, we actually are very small, we have over 200,000 followers on Facebook. That's because of the people that have been there. They tell everybody, and everybody gets involved, and it has become its own community. I can't encourage you enough. We'd love to have people visit us.
So where is Acton, California? For those of us on the East Coast who just see this long thing that looks like a state, where is Acton?
Acton is, to quote from downtown Burbank, it's about 40 minutes north of Burbank. It's in Los Angeles County, so it's still in LA County. It's outside of LA City, so it's about 40 minutes north of the center of LA, of Hollywood, and that's all. And it's very easy to get to. It's all highway and, you know, very simple place. And I said the new place that with the new ranch has real bathrooms and the whole thing. We feel like we're the Beverly Hillbillies that's coming there. we just need a cement pond and we'll be fine. but the ranch is actually one of the key components. Is the new ranch is surrounded by the Angeles National Forest, which gives us a number of benefits. Number one, we're not going to have neighbors, which is really important because yes, they will howl at 2 o'clock in the morning, no matter how. Hurley, you have to get up in the morning. If they're in the mood to howl, they'll howl. But more importantly, it's within the nature of their world that they're surrounded. Wolves are climbers, so we're in a forest. There's tremendous opportunities for hiking trails. It's really kind of in the wild, but we're right in LA County. And it's a terrific place where there's resources. We can build training centers. All kinds of opportunities are going to be done. This is a 3-year program. Getting the ranch was the first step, and now really building it up to where we want it to be is going to be the next step. So there's plenty of room for everybody to come visit. Eventually, the school wants us to build facilities so that the teens can do they can come weekends, they can do summers here. So we're looking at building dormitories and all kinds of, I said, corporate retreats. There'll just be a tremendous opportunity for people to really see what does the wolf bring to the planet. Let me touch on that for a second, if you don't mind. There's the environmental issue, of wolves. You know, I was at a hearing about a year and a half ago that in the state of California was asked to consider whether or not the gray wolf should retain its protected status in the state. And a bunch of paid activists came to this hearing. Their big argument was, why do you give protection to an animal that doesn't even live here anymore? We killed them all off. So fortunately, they had better wisdom and that it's still protected in the state. But the reason they're protected and the reason they should be protected everywhere, you don't have to look any further than Connecticut, just north of New York City. Connecticut and other did a wolf, I'm going to use the word cleansing, several years ago, getting rid of the wolves in Connecticut. And as a result of that, the deer population exploded. And as a result of that, Lyme disease is at an epidemic proportion. The CDC estimates it's costing $1 billion to deal with this, all because they got rid of the wolves. So we asked people, what really is the motivation? Well, it turns out these hunters, these people that were testifying at this hearing, their real motivation was, in addition to the guns, was about, well, the animals killed the antelope and the elk before we can kill them. So it wasn't about anything humanitarian at all. It was purely recreational.
Jeez. Could you tell us the story about the river that the wolves have to put back into place?
Yeah. Well, it's another situation exactly where the wolves, again, with the deer, you know, and wild animals. There are going to be wild animals that are going to, keep the borders of a river level. So a deer eats the grass, and obviously that's where the river is able to flow. But you get rid of the wolves, the deer population explodes. You get rid of the wolves, you get rid of the deer as well. This is a situation when they got rid of both. And all of a sudden, everything started growing out of control, and the river took a different path. And it is so precise how the animals work in unison in nature. There's a balance. There's the balance that's already existing. We don't need to change the balance. We need to respect the fact that animals are here for a reason. There is a pattern. Yes, nobody wants to think of a wolf taking down an antelope. It's not a pleasant sight, but that is also nature. They are not animals that, as a pack, are going to raid chicken nests, because chickens are not going to keep them hungry. We serve them every day. Every morning they get fresh meat, whether it's chicken or venison or beef, really high-quality food. They're not going to get that in the wild. They're going to eat every couple of weeks. So they're going to look for something substantial to take down. And again, because they hunt as a pack, you don't need a pack of wolves to take down a chicken. Maybe to roast a chicken, but not to take it down. So there is this balance, and it's not just wolves. It's all the animals have this role. For some reason, wolves have been demonized, whether through popular culture, whether through rumor and innuendo. If you did a survey of people who don't know anything about this, they would be shocked to hear what the things I'm saying. But yet there's so much research going on now. That's another difference. Academia is finally getting around to this. They're realizing that there's a real value in studying the wolf and studying the impact on people, not just from the environmental point of view, but the energy. There was a study done that a human being's brain, when they are with a wolf, the brain goes through the same changes as when they're with a baby. It's that calming. Your brain activity, everything slows down. The wolf brings your energy down. You know, one of the things I'm going to miss about the old ranch is that it was kind of back off the road. So you had a natural break. You came off the freeway at 70 miles an hour. Then there was one road. It was 50 miles an hour. Then it went to 40 miles an hour. And then you got into what was basically a non-road, an unpaved, complete rocky road. And that slowed you down to 5 miles an hour. So from 70 to 5, your energy level was being brought down. So by the time you got up to the ranch, a mile later, you were already understanding about how to slow things down. The new ranch has paved roads and everything, so it won't be that easy, but it's the kind of thing we tell people before they meet the animals, before they go on a hike, get your energy level down. This is, you know, we're in an age, and it drives me crazy, Cheryl, that I understand the importance of using your cell phone to capture everything, but we try to tell people, enjoy the experience. We'll take photos. We'll give you the photos for free. Don't worry about that. But be with them. Be with the animals. See how they are when you hike. See how they are when they're in the wild with you. See how they are when they're in a stream and they go nuts splashing in the stream. And here's something else you see when they're in a stream. And by the way, we have had a stream this year. There has been some rain here. Wolves have one unique advantage. They have no scent. Again, the difference between a dog. A wet dog, we know what it smells like. A wet wolf doesn't smell like anything. A wolf that is wet, that even can roll around in the mud, the coat dries very, very quickly. They shake it off. The mud, the dirt is all gone, and the fur is smooth again. They're perfect hunters in that regard. But the fact is, they're not, people think they make great pets because of that. No, that's because they're great hunters, is because of that. They're very unique. They're not dogs. I think we should say that like every 4 minutes on this show. They're not dogs.
That's
and I love dogs.
Point.
And they're not dogs.
They're not dogs, and wolves are gorgeous.
No.
And people who like the German Shepherd type of a dog, you know, they'll say, well, maybe I should get a wolf hybrid. No, do not get a wolf hybrid. No, they don't belong in people's homes.
They don't. And again, you know, there's licensing and regulatory issues, but even in the states where they're legal, they are wild animals. And, you know, this is kind of like they can be trained, they can be, you know, they can be humanized and socialized, but still we treat them as wild animals every moment we're with them because we understand that. Part of it is showing them the respect that they deserve, that they are wild animals, and we show them the respect. You know, there is, excuse me, losing my voice here. As you can imagine, if something would happen to any one of our guests with the animals, take a drink here. I don't want to be thirsty Paul Ryan on your show. And God forbid something should happen, that animal has to be put down immediately under California law. So therefore, we take great pains to make sure the animals are cared for. If they are going to be in a program, they're going to be in a good mood that day. We can sense what's going on with them. They may have, just like anything else, they may not be feeling well. They could just have had a bad experience. So we're very careful with that because you also want to be careful with our volunteers as well. Fortunately, there have been no accidents like that at all. That's how hard it is to take care of them.
You know, this has been a great hour, and it's flown by. We only have about 2 minutes left. And before we close out, I'd like to ask you briefly to talk about your daughter, the Wolf Whisperer, and once more give the contact information for Wolf Connection. I think it is so cool that she does that. How did she come into doing that?
Well, you know, my involvement started because of my daughter, who's now 18. She was 10 years old, and there's a wolf rescue facility on the west coast of Florida, in Naples, believe it or not. And so she was visiting her great aunt, and they heard about it, and she and her mom and her great aunt went to see it. And she's always been interested in wolves, and she's kind of a remarkable kid to begin with, but she was able to just breathe and understand that when she was with the animals, and they really were able to sense that about her. And it's very unusual because kids tend to be hyperactive, but when she was around the animals, she was the exact opposite. So when we came back to California a couple years later, we found Wolf Connection. Literally, they were doing a fundraiser at a restaurant near us. That's how we found them. And she again got involved, and she started going up to the ranch every couple of weeks to see if she could help out. She was a little bit underage. She was also kind of a featherweight, so couldn't do the heavy lifting. But there was one day that I'm up there, and because I drove her, and it's like, I'm ready to go, and I can't find my daughter. And I'm looking around, and I hear somebody in a loud stage whisper say, she's back here. And in the back of the kennel, one of the senior staff was with my daughter, and she and the animals were sleeping together. And that got me involved. And Teo and how I got involved, the answer is simply Teo is a very persuasive guy. And, you know, I've always been the kind of person like you that I want to do what's never been done before. And that's what Wolf Connection is. This has never been done before. Even when we talk to regulators and we bring it up and they go, you're going to put these gang members with wolves? And we go, yeah, that's kind of the program. Come and see it. You'll understand it. And they do.
And it works. But we never got to the success rate. Tell us your percentages.
Poor. Because they're being bred so greatly. It's poor.
Well, kids finishing school, kids not going back to criminal activities, your success rate.
Oh, those kids. I thought you meant the animals. Sorry. I misheard you. No, with the kids, it's great. The success rate is enormous. I thought you were saying about the adoption rate of the and of the animals. No, the teens, the school's district loves us. That's what they want us to expand the program. They want us to go all year round. We have a waiting list of people that want to use our programs. And we've been telling them for a couple of years, wait till we get the new ranch. because we were already too big, too crowded. So we have a waiting list of programs in various areas with various populations, but particularly underserved, underprivileged kids, these kids who have had nothing in their lives that really need a jolt to say to them, hey, you're okay. These animals are going to, if you get them to trust you, imagine what you can do with your life. Because nobody's ever believed in them. And the wolves do.
I can't tell you how happy I am that you came here to share the message of Wolf Connection. You gave your voice for Wolf Connection. They should appreciate that for you. You can't tell any more than I can.
I get a little passionate about it. Yeah, I do get passionate about it.
Thank you for being here with us.
Again, the website is wolfconnection.org, or you can go to Facebook and look us up on Facebook, which is also connected. But also go to YouTube and put in Wolf Connection. And the videos really do show you a lot of what I'm talking about. And thank you for having me so much.
It was great having you. Thank you. You know, check out the website, make donations, get involved. This is a great cause for many, many reasons. In 2 weeks, please come back. My guest will be one of our favorites on Catalytic Radio, Dean Schrock, PhD. And we're going to hear what's new in Dean's life. And he's got a chapter in a brand new book that's making some waves. We're going to talk about that. My website is transformingtruelove.com. Check it out, please. I am Cheryl Hirsch Kramer, thanking you for being here with us tonight, and many blessings to you and yours.